But I had one tube that's called a detector tube. I can remember what that looked like. It was an unsilvered, or at least you could look inside and see the works that were inside the tube, but the rest of them were all silvered inside, a getter that they used to get the last traces of gas out. And they were sort of straight-sided, sloping outward, like an ice cream cone, only not as extreme, and then rounded over the top. Then there was one box that always intrigued me. There was a metal box within the box at the back, maybe 10 inches long, 2 inches wide. And there was stuff in there that was filled with tar. And it always bugged me that I couldn't see what was inside that part of the radio to try to figure out how it worked.
How about TV?
Well, television came much later. I first heard of television in Schenectady when I was working for GE, and may have seen
it
there.
Way?
Oh yes. Television is an outgrowth of World War II radar. Now, I saw plenty of radar, you see, during World War II because I trained in the field of electronics, radar, and whatnot. Became an ensign and took special courses in it at MIT, Harvard, Bowdoin College at Brunswick, Maine, and Honolulu Naval Base. And I was pretty good at up-to-date modern electronics. When you go back to the year 1945, I know it quite well. So much has happened since then, I'm out of it. But TV was an outgrowth of all that World War II experience in radar. And I probably saw it at General Electric somewhere or other. There was a station, probably one of the early TV stations, right there in Schenectady. It would broadcast a few hours a day.
How about cars?
Well, cars go way back, of course. I can remember Model T Fords. One car I especially remember, when my grandmother was dying, Ed Rich Jr., there was a famous doctor, delivered all of my mother's boys, named Ed Rich. He had a son, Edward Jr., Ed Jr. Rich. And his father's getting old, and he would come out on house calls and whatnot. In those days, a doctor would drive 5 miles from Ogden out to Marriott to make a house call. See, it wasn't like today. So when my grandmother was dying, he came out to attend to her, and he had one of the early V8 Fords. There was a Model T Ford, then they had the Model A, which was a four-cylinder with a gear shift. And then they had a Model B that was a very brief thing. And the Model A's and Model B's only lasted about 4 years. And then Henry Ford came out with a V8, the first V8 automobiles in the low price range. Big Lincolns and Cadillacs, I think, had V8 engines. But Henry Ford pioneered the V8 engine for passenger cars, which became the standard. Chevrolet was a long time in coming to the V8, but finally all automobiles came to the V8. He had one of these V8s, and it was red, and it was a coupe. And it had the grille, it was sort of a V, but slanting like that. And the chrome, it was just beautiful, you know, just the latest thing that only a doctor could afford, a young doctor, I guess. Well, I thought that was so neat. But I can remember that car. By that time, I was very car conscious, and I would ride into town on my bicycle. And later on, when we moved into town, my friend Lane Compton and I would go see all the new cars. You know, a new model would come out every year. We'd go see the Chevrolets and the Fords and the Dodges and all of them. I was always a Ford fan. Some of my friends, Chevrolet was the best automobile, and you know, I just couldn't understand that. We would argue which was the best automobile. But I was a Ford fan on account of Henry Ford was one of my heroes, see. And there was a period when Fords definitely were not as good as Chevrolets and others, but I held out. I wouldn't give in. Fords were the best.
Faithful there.
What about telephone?
Yeah, do you remember any of the other scientific wonders?
Well, yeah, we had a telephone when we lived on the corner of 16th Street and Jefferson Avenue in Ogden. So that was before I was 7 or 8 years old. And I don't quite remember the reason we had that telephone. I can remember my mother lifting me up to that telephone to talk to my grandfather Hall once. Well, I must have been fairly young, 4 or 5. My dad had that telephone because of his job. And I don't remember what his job was that required a telephone.
Why was your grandmother dying? What do you remember about her death?
Well, just old age. She was 83. She'd been an invalid for a long time. I do not know the exact cause of my grandmother Tracy's, Emma Tracy's death. Causes incident to old age, I guess. She had rheumatism very severely. That was the old-fashioned name for what we call arthritis nowadays. They had rheumatism in their day. And it was very painful, very aggravating. I think it was more severe in their day than in our day because of their diet and their nutrition. They didn't know the things we know nowadays.
What did they do for the funeral? What was the funeral like in those days?
Well, they used to sit with the dead in those days. I know the viewing was at my Uncle Helen's, Henry's house. They sometimes used to bring the casket to the home. And then they'd have a wake. Not like some wakes you hear about, but at least somebody would always sit up with the dead person until they were buried. I can remember
now,
what
that. What was your reasoning behind
that? I don't
that?
Know. They don't do that anymore.
Well, some people do. I've heard of them.
Oh, do they
the
still
East?
Do it?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
still do that.
Out in the West, they don't do it nowadays. I can remember that my Uncle Helen, or I'm sorry, my Uncle Aaron, talked at her funeral. My Uncle Aaron was probably the only educated Tracy in those days. He had a master's degree, which he had obtained by correspondence course.
Is he the one who was president of Weber?
President of Weber College.
Hmm.
He brought a stenographer to take down the proceedings of the funeral, and I can remember that because it was this old-fashioned stenotype machine. You remember those? Maybe they still have them. I don't know. Just a few keys on there. It's a shorthand, you know. But he brought the secretary, which I guess he had at Weber College, and she typed on this stenotype machine the proceedings of that funeral. I don't know where that record is. I'd never even thought of that till just now.
That's interesting.
Somewhere there should be a typed record of the funeral of my grandmother Tracy, and it's probably in the effects of Aaron Tracy, his widow, and Ethel Marriott Tracy probably has those. Somewhere.
Now, what was your grandmother's name?
Emma Maria Burdett Tracy.
I can't remember if you told us about her or not in your first tape.
Well, I don't know. She was a woman that looks... You've seen the picture of her and all her children at the family picture taken at the... Tracy reunion in Idaho Falls around 1927. We have that picture. You probably have a copy of it. She looks just like she does in that picture. She no doubt was a very good looking woman when she was young, because she still looked quite good, you know, up around age 75 or so. She braided her hair and usually put it up on her head like many older women did in that day, you know, wrap it into something on the back of your head.
Mm-hmm.
So her hair was usually tight, braided, and in that roll or that bun, whatever you would call that kind of a hairdo. She would mend our clothes. She would mend our stockings and sew patches on her clothes to try and do something, you know, for a board and keep. But that's all she was up to. She couldn't walk. My father was very patient with her. He'd carry her around to where she had to be in her wheelchair, in her rocking chair. They didn't have wheelchairs in those days. She sat in a rocking chair. She'd have to be lifted into the rocking chair, lifted out from her bed. I never was too observant on this, but I know that she had to be taken to the bathroom, you know, put on a bedpan, like a hospital bedpan. I know we had that at the house for her, you know.
Hmm.
Her kids would come to see her once in a while. I think Uncle Harold was as frequent a visitor as any. He'd come in with a $10 bill and give it to Grandma. And say, "Now, Mother, do not pay any tithing on that. I have already paid tithing on that." He'd give her a lecture on that every time. She'd pay her tithing on it every time.
Now, is this the one who always wanted to listen to KSL?
Yeah.
She was a real...
I have the impression that her children did not help her much. This occasional $10 once a year, maybe, or twice a year at most, from Uncle Harold, was about it. My parents provided for her upkeep in the main. I remember hearing my mother complain a little on occasion about the fact that nobody else ever helped. I think in particular the oldest son, who owed money. You know, sort of the story of like Grandfather Langford. The kids see money there and they come after it. I don't know. I remember that my Uncle Heelan was supposed to pay my grandmother's funeral expenses because he had owed for the farm. He took over my grandfather Tracy's farm, see. And what I gather from hearing my parents talk is he never paid for it, see.
Oh, that's too bad.
Thing that often happens in families. He was supposed to pay the funeral expenses. I think he never completed the job, and my mom and dad ended up doing it.
Yeah, I hope they got...
I don't know how much of this kind of stuff anybody should ever put in. You know, I have no grievances against any of my people or any of them, but you know these things do go on.
Well, might as well be realistic, you know. Get the whole story.
You need little insights
into the families. And it says something about your parents, that they took care of her under very trying circumstances when they were obviously having a very hard time.
Well, my grandmother Tracy lived with us when we were on 16th Street. I can remember clear back to them when I was 4 or 5 years old. She lived with us Jefferson Avenue and 16th Street in Ogden. She was somewhat stern. Seemed that way because I was a kid, because she would be telling me not to do things. And maybe she wasn't stern. I can remember, kids had greater freedom then. Fireworks were legal. And I was playing with firecrackers when I was 5 or 6 years old. And I guess my parents knew it. But just using firecrackers was never enough for me. I had taken a pipe and put it in our sand or dirt in the backyard. And I'd set a firecracker in there, light it, and bash it with a coal shovel. We used to have little coal shovels, about 4 inches by 7 inches, for shoveling coal into the stove. And knock the firecracker down to the bottom with that as soon as I lit it, and then put a rock in as fast as I could. So I had a cannon.
If I'd been her, I would have been stern too.
And I remember my grandmother out the window, back window one day, you know, scolding me for that. Dangerous. But just shooting off, I never got a kick out just shooting off a firecracker. I wanted to make a cannon or put it inside a Raleigh tobacco can and blow up the can, stuff like that.
Oh.
You know, get something out of your firecracker.
High pressure already then.
Yeah.
In your blood. Well, was this the one Mom was telling me about? Some relative in there who thought children were terrible, who had a very stern idea, puritanistic approach to...
On my side of the family?
Yeah.
Sex
and marriage and having a family, and she thought it was terrible to have
children.
I had
the impression that was my grandmother Hall, but she had had 5 kids herself. But I have the distinct impression, it's probably a correct impression, but after she'd had these kids, she somehow had a change of heart that people should not be having kids. But I don't know. See, my Aunt Sam and my Uncle Sam, my dad's brother, and Aunt Violet never had any children. I don't know why they did, really. But I have this impression that they didn't have them because they agreed with grandmother they shouldn't have kids. My grandmother Hall. But that could be all wrong. But I sure do have that impression of hearing my parents talk. But maybe they just couldn't have kids. I don't really know.
Hmm.
But I heard that kind of talk. Now, maybe that kind of talk was erroneous, presumptuous.
Well, I've only heard that once, but I thought I'd ask if you'd heard that, too.
Well, I heard that from my parents, I'm sure. But they didn't have kids simply because they didn't want to. I don't know that that's the truth. My grandmother Hall, yeah, she was a stern woman, more stern than my grandmother Tracy. But she looked stern, see. She had a stern appearance.
She looks very dominating.
She had, well...
very haughty.
Well, I don't know. I like to go to my grandmother Hall's, but she had deep, really deep-set eyes and a rather stern appearance. That would have been... Woodcox would have been her name. Marianne Woodcox Hall. But I like to go to her house. She always had cookies.
Oh, that doesn't sound so
But Grandma Hall smoked a... Grandfather Hall smoked a pipe or something, and he drank his liquor. And their house always had that odor of tobacco, you know. And I never did like that, even as a kid, to go in her house and have that odor. But she had a clean house. She was a good housekeeper. And she always had cookie jar and stuff like that.
What do you remember about your grandfather, besides that he smoked and drank?
Well, my grandfather Hall always looked neat. It was hard to talk to him. I tried when I was in my teenage years. I'd go up there on my bicycle and sit out on a chair on the porch with him and try to talk to him. He was a quiet man. And, you know, I was not an aggressive type individual myself, and so we'd just sort of sit there with each other. But when I'd ask him questions, his answers would be brief. He wouldn't really go into anything. I was very interested in trains and railroading and things like that, and I'm sure I asked him those kind of questions because he was an old railroad man. Didn't really learn anything, you know.
Well, is that how Grandpa Hall got started on his railroading?
Yeah.
Was this his father? This was his father?
Yeah, this is my dad's father. But... When I was growing up, my grandfather Hall was only with the railroad indirectly. He was in the transfer business. And that was a business apparently financed by my father. You see, my father did not get married until he was 32. He went to work when he was 11. And his mother took all his money. He kept living with his mother until he was 32 years old. And he contributed to the household. The whole works. They took all his money. See? And, my dad, I remember, told the story.
Was that tradition in general?
Yeah, in general, I think that's tradition in those days. I can remember my dad talking about how bad he felt one time when he took his paycheck and bought a bottle of soda pop for himself and his friend that came out of his paycheck before he took him home to his mother, and his mother scolded him about it. So, as I understand it, that money of my father's is what set my grandfather Hall up in the transfer and storage business. And my dad was a kind of a partner, I don't know what kind of a partner, in that business. And their business was located on Lower 25th Street on the south side. I would judge 1.5 blocks east of Wall Avenue. Wouldn't be there any longer today. My grandfather Hall had trucks. For transferring baggage and moving household goods there, mainly in the moving and storage business. And I can remember them having Dodge trucks. One of the early trucks they had was a Ford. As a matter of fact, my father claims that my grandfather, Paul, and his, it was called City Transfer and Storage, is the name of the company, had the first trucks in the transfer business in Ogden. See, they used horses pulling wagons. If it wasn't the first that they had, it was the first large trucks. They bought the largest trucks available as soon as trucks were available to operate in the transfer business. And my dad used to drive all over. He would carry, even in that day of dirt roads and whatnot, he would take household furniture clear into Wyoming, clear into Idaho, places like that on his truck. And I can remember interesting stories he's told. I think we got him on tape on some of these things, some of the troubles he's had when the trucks have broken down. He's been on these long trips and days when there weren't garages and gas stations and things like that. Behind my grandfather Hall's home which was on Bedford Avenue, slightly east of Wall Avenue in Ogden, on the north side of the street. He had barns behind his home where he kept his horses, stables, you know, before the day of trucks. He had transfer business with horses in the beginning. Now, I don't know at what point my dad was in the railroad business and in the transfer business. I don't know the sequence of things on that. But I gather he may have been in the railroad and then in the transfer business and then back in the railroad again. So maybe he did not have a continuous seniority from age 11 on. But the time he married my mother, he was a brakeman on the railroad. You work your way up from this, that. I don't know how it goes, brakeman, fireman, engineer. My dad had been all of these. Engineer was the top post. And my dad was fireman on the railroad back in the days when you had to shovel coal. And it was hotter than blazes.
Mm.
And there you were, just constantly shoveling coal, you know, into the boiler.
I wonder if that's what affected his heart later on. His heart problem.
I don't know. Dad was a strong, vigorous man, pretty much. He had a mild heart attack at 65, but he lived to what, 85?
So, it wasn't that serious.
He was strong. My father was a small man, but very strong. Very.
Well, he used to move furniture, didn't he? And
he
carry it right on his...
He claimed he could lift a whole piano all by himself and take it upstairs. I don't know whether he's bragging, but he claimed he'd done it.
Well, he wouldn't lie. Grandpa...
Yeah, he was a very strong man.
He was very
strong. I remember when he was 65, he could do one-handed chin-ups.
Hmm. What happened to that Ferris wheel he made that was in your shop?
Well, if you want any of
that
stuff, David's thrown it around, and I haven't straightened it up. Some of it's still there.
I should have had you bring that with you in the car for me. I've been going to
time. It's just kicking around the shop, getting ruined, and some may be missing because David's not too sentimental, and David's not a collector. David is not a junk man like
I had
I am.
A feeling the last time I was out there to
anything
bring that, but we just couldn't fit it in the
anything not in current use, David would be inclined to throw away.
Well, I was a dummy. I should have had you bring that with you out here for me. Well, I'll have to talk to David. Tell him to keep that around. I'm very sentimental about that. The only reason I didn't get it back here was because we couldn't fit it in our car.
I know I've seen the Ferris wheel, but it's out stacked in the junk. You know, it's not being protected. It's just getting... shop-worn, so to speak, as it's thrown around from here to there as you move stuff around.
Well, I'll come and get that, because he did tell me I could have that. That's on tape. Okay. What were your biggest fears as a child? Can you remember any? Besides those bratty kids in the store.
I can remember being afraid of the dark at some time when I was young. And I remember being afraid of lightning. I heard wild stories about lightning from my grandmother. They talked about, I remember them talking about what to do to be safe in a thunderstorm. Don't be in front of a window, be inside, put teacups under the legs of your chairs and sit on the chair, all kinds of stuff like that. Somehow I developed quite a fear of lightning. That's when I was, 6 or 7 or 8, something like that.
When do you think you first had a testimony of the gospel?
No, I couldn't tell you that. It just developed slowly and stayed. I always believed the church was true as long as I can remember.
Never had any doubts or questions? Or?
Oh, I had doubts and questions when I was a teenager on occasion, but not... I don't know that I can even say that, honestly, because I always defended the church. I never, even with my friends who had doubts. I don't think I could say that I really did have doubts. All I could say is I may have had my spiritual highs and lows, but, you know, not really doubts. I was very valiant as a youth, teenager, very Very valiant, never questioning, always defending.
Did your parents, what was your family routine as far as the gospel was concerned? Did you have daily scripture reading? Did you have family home evenings back then?
Well, I don't remember. I know there was something that was like family home evening. I don't remember the term. But yes, I can remember Book of Mormon reading around the stove, particularly in the wintertime. At the kitchen stove in Marriott, I can remember Book of Mormon reading. We had family scripture reading. I can remember that definitely. At a young age.
Did you have family prayer? Did you always
had family prayer. Yeah.
Did you have two Sunday meetings like we do now? You would go to Sunday school in the morning and evening service in the evening? And
yeah.
That was fast Sunday like it is now?
No. In rural areas, sacrament meeting is late. I imagine our sacrament meetings came at 7 or 7:30 after the cows are milked, see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember when fast meeting was in Marriott. I just don't. Whether it was afternoon or whether it was same time sacrament meeting, I don't know. Sunday school and priesthood in the morning. Sacrament meeting in the evening. I can remember having cleaning assignments at the church when I was young. Our whole family sweeping, mopping, cleaning.
What were your useful hobbies? I know you liked radios and junkyards.
I liked radio and junkyards. Oh, I made whistles. There's a way you can make a whistle out of a willow by skinning the whole cylindrical piece off from the willow and cutting out a notch in the wood beneath and cutting a hole in that and make a whistle like your kids were just playing, you know.
Hmm.
We used to make those. Swimming was fun. I'm thinking of Marriott days now, which were my youthful years where I was, you know, real conscious. That's age 7 through around 12, 13, 14, something like that.
What was your idea of a fun date when you were in your teens? Were you still in Marriott when you were a teenager?
We left Marriott when I was at around Christmas time. When I was in the 9th grade, Marriott Schoolhouse 9th graders were sent to Wilson Lane that year. We caught the school bus to go to Wilson Lane. And then we moved to the 664-30th setting. And I rode with school teachers who lived not too far away out to Wilson Lane to school and continued to finish my 9th grade at Wilson Lane. I noticed girls fairly early. One reason I think I noticed girls early is that the Marriott kids were tough, rough farm kids, and I was a gentle person.
Mm.
And I
the
remember
the girls were a little nicer.
Girls were gentler. I can remember the first girl where I, you know, had some feelings that girls were nice was a little black-eyed girl whose name was Powell. I don't remember her first name. I was in the 4th grade. She was in the 3rd grade. And I can remember playing jacks with her on the schoolhouse steps, and the boys, you know, oh, you big sissy. But if you ask me about a girl where I had some feelings, you know, that here's something nice, it would have been that little girl when I was only 9 years old. Later on, at Marriott School, let's see, there was an age when the boys had girlfriends. I don't know what age that was. I couldn't have been more than 12. And they sort of assigned you a girlfriend in a way.
What, the tougher boys?
Yeah,
did that?
I had, there was, let's see, how did that work? I'm not sure. There was a Hales family in the ward. And there was a girl named Roeen Hales that I sort of had a crush on. I don't know, maybe I was 13, 14. But some of the other boys wanted her, and so they says, she's not your girl, this Irma Carter is your girl.
And you didn't like Irma Carter?
Not as much as Rowan Hale's girl. But to tell you the truth, a girl I liked better than either one was a girl who was older than I, whose name was Wanda Hales, the sister of Rolene. She was a nicer girl. More mature, and she was a nice girl, but she was somebody else's girlfriend. I think Alma Slater's or somebody else had his eye on her. When we moved into the city on 664 30th Street, I learned that the Haleses had moved to the top of 30th Street in those days, up the hill, which was Harrison Avenue and 30th Street. They lived on the corner. It would have been the southwest corner of the street, and I can remember riding a bicycle up there and talking to her a couple of times, but no more than that. Now, in the case of Irma Carter, I may have even ridden my bicycle out to Marriott to see her on occasion. I guess there was a time when I decided she was okay. In those days, you'd go up to somebody's house and you wouldn't knock or anything. You'd just call, you know, if your friend and that was Leroy, you'd just go up the house and call, Leroy! You wouldn't knock and say, is Leroy there? You just holler. I just did what the other kids did. That's what you did. You didn't call for girls, though. I was too bashful to knock on the door. I just call for Leroy, you know, and then hope that what did I say her name was? Carter.
Wanda?
No, it was, anyway, the Carter girl, whatever her name was. There were some other Carter girls. Now, later on, this Carter girl became, you know these theaters that have the glass-in cage where the ticket gal mm-hmm. sits? She mm-hmm. was a ticket gal in there, and I saw her a few times, sat hello and talked to her a little bit. It's the last I ever knew concerning her. She had a sister, Stella Carter, that was my age. This girl was a year or two younger. Stella was a nice girl. She was not as pretty as the younger girl, but she was a nice girl. I know one time, I don't know how it was, I was in the fifth grade. She was in the fifth grade, too. For some reason or other, I got kissed on the cheek by her.
Stella?
Yeah, by Stella. That seemed like it was nice. I don't even remember the situation.
Your first kiss.
Well, I couldn't tell you what my first kiss was. I don't think. Later girlfriends, yeah, up to when
yeah,
I got
your,
up to be
a, about your
when I got up to be a teenager, where the you know your passions and emotions were starting to run strong, maybe 15 years old, maybe 16. Let's see, 19, 15 years old. I got a real crush on a girl in our neighborhood whose name was Catherine D. Mick. She was Dutch father and mother. He was later the Bishop D. Mick. But I had a real crush on her. My friend Lane Conta and I sort of decided to pick out a couple of girlfriends, you know, and he picked out a girl, what was her name, and I picked out Catherine D. Mick. And I really had a crush on her. I can remember going to a football or game or something, you know, and holding her hand. Oh, boy. Wow. Didn't know such feelings could exist, you know. I think I got a kiss out of her once, so I probably kissed a girl by the time I was 15. Terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on that. I think I did. But then she jilted me, you know. Oh, what agony. I can remember praying that Heavenly Father would make her like me and all kinds of silly things. Desperate love. But by the time I was doing that, I think I was maybe, I don't know, I was in high school, maybe 17. I saw her when Mom and I went up to our ward and went out on a canning project, and Catherine was there. She was married. She married a fellow named, can't think of his name. But then at the chorus reunion a year ago, you know, the 18th Ward Boys Chorus Reunion,
mm-hmm.
We saw her and her husband. She sent one of her sons. They've lived in California most of their life. The husband's been in the Navy. Norman Chatfield was the boy. they sent a son. They had a son going on a mission who stopped off in Provo for some reason, and Catherine had him look us up. He was really a fine boy. We were really impressed with her kid. That's the only kid I've ever seen of hers. It was that one boy who stopped at our house for a day or two. Oh, I don't know. There were other girlfriends. I was in love with teachers, the way you are with teachers from time to time. I really was probably in love with my third, fourth, and fifth grade teachers, Beulah Stalling. She was really wonderful to me.
She taught you 3 years?
Yeah, all in the same room. Three rooms, three classes in the same room. Good setup. Hmm. I like it that way.
Hmm.
She's probably dead by now. I've seen her once.
What was her name again?
Beulah Stallings. She was not married yet. I don't know her married name. She married...
Stallings?
Yes, she was from Eden, Utah, or Huntsville, or somewhere up in that part of the world, as I remember. She married the sheriff, one of the sheriffs, or maybe the sheriff of, I don't know whether it was Weber County or what. And I have heard his name, but I can't remember it. I went to see her once after we were married and after I was working at GE. I don't know whether I'd made diamonds yet or not. I don't think I had. She gave me a picture or two of Days and Marriott that I was very happy to get at that time. She said to Stella Carter that I mentioned before, who married some band leader, you know, some musician, back in the days when we had bands, had got copies of every picture this teacher ever had and had a very fine collection of Marriott Days. And if I wanted certain pictures to look up this Stella Carter, I had never done that.
Hmm.
And
what's
of course,
Stella
I don't know,
Carter's name
I don't
now?
Know her maiden name. She's supposed to have married a musician. She's in a band, a fairly famous one, as I remember.
You mean you don't know her married name?
Don't know her married name.
So it'd be hard to track her down then.
Yeah.
Well, could you still get in touch with Miss Stallings?
I doubt that she is still living. She might be, but I kind of doubt that she would.
Be interesting to have those pictures.
Yeah.
I'm curious about those myself.
Yeah. I was in love with our course leader, Ina Barnes, is where a lot of the other boys...
I heard about her.
I was terribly in love with her. She's 10 years older than me. She never did get married. She is not
She's
married.
She's the one who had that long hair.
Yeah,
that
right.
Clear down the front
yeah.
of
mm-hmm.
her dress.
Oh, then there was an era. There was an era in there, sort of after I finally began to realize, you know, you can't be in love with this lady who's 10 years older than you. And the boys were... Oh, this is during the time when the boys were going out with all the girls and they're sitting in cars and hugging and kissing and whatnot. I got in on that kind of business. I guess some people escaped that, but in my day, I don't know a single boy that escaped that kind of thing.
On what business? I missed it because that's talking about
Oh, just
Daniel.
Going with the fast girls who hug and kiss.
Oh.
And, old May Ritchie, well, I shouldn't name these girls off, I guess, was sort of that way. There was a Ruth Nye. There was a Sims girl, and there was a... I think most of these girls turned out all right. I know they did. I know some of them. In fact, I can't say any of them turned out bad, but they were just fairly free with hugging and kissing.
Not more than that.
Yeah, not to my knowledge, except in a few cases. Well, these girls that I'm talking about now, no more than that I ever knew. Pretty free with hugging and kissing. And I got mixed up with some of that with some of the girls. I couldn't tell you how many. Maybe two or three of them. One kiss out of two or three of those kind of girls. I wasn't bold like my other boyfriends. And then after that kind of business, then sort of when I started going with Mom, I guess.
What?
I really never had many girls that, were ones I would have wanted to marry. Like Catherine D. Mick, I would have wanted to marry her. I would have thought of marriage in terms of Ina Barnes and Mother. Probably those are the only ones, I ever thought of or somebody I'd like to marry.
Well, for that many years, that was pretty good, Dad. I don't know how this one got in there. It doesn't really fit in. But what chores did you dislike and or like the most?
Well, in those days, you had coal and wood, you know, for heat and cooking. Well, I had to chop wood and bring in wood, and same with coal. I didn't like those too well. We had to hoe. Hoeing is a rather hard job for kids. Hoeing in the hot sun for 8 hours, that's a hard job, but I did it. Picking beans is hard, but I did that. Picking cherries, thinning beets, popping beets.
Did you do jobs like dishes?
Not too much. Apparently, I was not a good dishwasher. I can remember my mom always scolding me for being. She'd say, I might as well have done myself or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, some jobs I didn't do too well. I can remember dusting piano and chairs and things like that. I don't think I did too much dishwashing. I did some.
You've always been so orderly and so systematic, and all these neat little piles and everything just where it belongs. Were you that way when you were a kid?
More so then than now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was
right from the start.
Oh, yeah. I would have my little box and everything all organized in my boxes, and I would really get mad when my brothers would mess up my orderly things.
And you were the oldest, weren't you?
Yeah.
From the five.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I was very possessive of what was mine, and I was very orderly, because I took good care of my things, and, you know, my brothers wouldn't. I didn't like them using them, because they wouldn't put them back, and they'd break them and stuff.
What were your sleeping quarters like? Did you have...
In those days, you'd sleep with the brother. You wouldn't have an individual bed. I slept with my brother Eugene all of my growing up years.
Were you all...
And Wendell slept with Donald.
Were you all in the same bedroom?
All in the same bedroom.
So there were five boys in the same bedroom?
Mm-hmm. Well, the youngest boy may have been with my parents. Delbert, the youngest, was probably in the bedroom with my parents. At least when he was young.
How well did you get along as five brothers, do you think?
Fairly well. Gene and I had problems sometimes. We were quite different in our interests. But no, I think as a general rule, we got along well.
We sure did, you know, from my observation later on.
Yes.
Going to visit.
See,
there
are no tempers in our family. No tempers. I could have been much more of a brother to Gene than I was, I think. But he, at least at times I can remember in my life, I wanted to be out range in the countryside. Gene was a reader. He would stay home and read the junior classics and things like that.
How did you learn to play the piano?
Well, I guess I fiddled with it a little bit, and then my Aunt Mary, you know, graciously offered to give me the lessons, which I flunked out on. Then during our years as explorers, or vanguards, I think they used to call them, in the MIA, when I was in high school, probably a junior in high school, a man came into the ward whose name was Salter as our explorer leader, along with another fellow whose name I've forgotten. I can see his face, I can't remember his name. This man was a musician. He had drums. He played the drums and he played the piano. Exploring was somewhat in those days like it is now. You know, you can, what do you explorers want to do? Don't you want to do something? You know, you have exploring posts that sort of get together and build boats or do something. Well, we had enough guys playing instruments, so we decided we wanted to play in an orchestra, our own orchestra. And he'd played in dance bands in California. And so that's how our dance band got started, which we perpetuated beyond after he left. So he sort of showed me the ropes of learning to play chords and gave me a few of his books to look at. And I bought some of my own and I became a self-taught piano player.
You were pretty good back then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was quite a good piano player years ago. I gave up piano playing when I I quit the band because of problems. I think probably somewhat personality problems. I was the natural leader, apparently. I was always the president of the class, or this, that, and the other. And I was the leader of the band, see. Salter used to take us out. He had a great big Packard. Packard was better than Cadillac in those days. He had this wonderful Packard automobile. And he would take us around. We played at Ogden High School and places like that. But as Salter moved on, went back to California or wherever he went, this Salter was having some trouble. I don't know if he's having a divorce or whatnot. And they smoke, too, and they go out with girls that smoke. You know, I always wonder what happened to Salter. He was in the optometry business, too, you know, fixing eyes and whatnot. He was a guy with lots of talent. They just had trouble with some bad habits. I wondered what happened to him. And two or three years ago, I read of his obituary in the Provo newspaper. He was living right there in Provo.
And you didn't even know.
And I didn't know
until he was too late.
Until he was dead. Because I would have sure gone to see him, you know. I understand he wasn't active in the church, but still, you know, he did a lot for me, and I would want to thank him. Now, I grew up and had enough sense to do it. I probably didn't when I was young.
Well, he probably read in the Provo paper about your activities. Did he know you were in town?
He couldn't have missed, but he probably felt bashful about approaching me, I guess. It's really a shame.
He felt bashful.
Salter.
But anyway, he loaned us his drums and all kinds of things. We had silly instruments in our first band. The standard band in those days had piano, bass fiddle, saxophones, trumpets, trombones, and clarinet. And saxophonists doubled on clarinets. We had a guy who played the clarinet, guy who played the mandolin, and a few other strange things, you know. But we had a band anyway with those folks.